Welcome to our deep dive today. We're going behind the scenes. The world of U.S. politics, fascinating stuff, based on electoral-vote.com. It's a political blog known for, you know, data analysis, witty take on current events. Buckle up. We're going deep into Elon Musk's growing influence in the government, Trump's trade war, pause with Mexico and Canada, and some interesting appointments in his second administration. It's like a peek behind the curtain in Washington. Cut through the noise. Understand what's really going on.
Electoral-vote.com is interesting. It's almost like an insider perspective, using sources, information, not in the mainstream media.
Okay, first story. Electoral-vote.com paints a picture of Elon Musk. They're comparing him to, get this, Mussolini. Il Duce, they call him. He may not be wearing a uniform or giving speeches from balconies. But the blog has concerns, serious concerns, about his power and access within the government.
Musk doesn't have an official position, but his ties to President Trump seem to give him unofficial power, significant power, the blog suggests. This influence and lack of transparency raises concerns about overreach and maybe even abuse.
Right. The blog describes the details surrounding Musk's activities as shaky. He seems to be keeping things quiet. For example, USEI, the U.S. Agency for International Development, Musk and his team are allegedly physically blocking access to offices. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Why all the secrecy?
The blog doesn't speculate on the reasons for this secrecy, but it does raise concerns about legality. Are they bypassing protocols, oversight? This lack of transparency makes you wonder about their motivations.
And then there's the whole issue of access to federal computer systems. Apparently, Musk and his team have access to sensitive data, the ACH network, the Treasury's payment system, OPM's federal HR databases, even the FDIC system, which oversees banks, we're talking about, financial and personal information of millions of Americans.
The potential consequences of this access are significant. The ACH network, for example, processes a huge volume of government transactions, social security payments, tax refunds, unauthorized access could be disruptive, data breaches, misuse of funds.
The blog calls Musk's tech team young, fiercely loyal, hackers. It's like a rogue operation inside the government, tech savvy, operating with autonomy. It makes you wonder about oversight, potential risks.
It is fascinating, but concerning, this dynamic. Challenges our understanding of how power works, influence, within the government, especially when you add technology.
And private individuals, the lack of boundaries, oversight, is a real concern.
What's the bottom line? What does it mean for us? The blog suggests that Musk could use this access for anything. Impounding funds, blackmailing federal employees. It's a scary thought. The potential impact is huge. Those are extreme scenarios. But they highlight the risks of unchecked power, access to information, sensitive information. The blog isn't saying that these things are happening, but it makes you think about the implications of this level of access and the lack of transparency.
Let's not forget money. The blog suggests that Musk could be positioning himself to profit personally by turning ex-Twitter into a financial hub, maybe even replacing the ACH network. I mean, guy's a billionaire, but it seems like he always wants more.
An interesting point. If Musk could integrate financial services into ex-Twitter, it could disrupt traditional institutions, give him even more economic power. Of course, there would be regulatory hurdles, scrutiny.
It sounds like we're entering uncharted territory, the blog mentions. Possible legal trouble for Musk. But it also highlights the challenges of holding him accountable. We're talking about a Department of Justice, compliant, and the possibility of presidential pardons. It's complicated.
It's true. Holding powerful people accountable is hard, especially Gosling. Strong political connections, the blog suggests, legal challenges might not be enough, they point to, pushback from employee unions, Democratic politicians, raising the alarm.
The blog mentions some hardball tactics that were being discussed, slowing down the Senate, using budget negotiations to rein in Musk's influence. So this is going to be the beginning of a power struggle with major consequences.
We'll see how it plays out. Will they be able to set boundaries, ensure accountability, or will things get even more blurry between private influence and public policy?
Let's switch gears, talk about something a little more familiar, Trump's trade wars, specifically the recent pause on tariffs against Mexico and Canada, it looks like. A win for Trump. But the blog wants us to look closer.
The blog points out the celebrations among Trump supporters, but it also injects some skepticism. They question the concessions that Trump claims to have won from Mexico and Canada. Look beyond the words, they say.
Exactly. The blog highlights the market reactions, the plunge. when tariffs were announced, followed by a rebound after the pause, makes you think, was this about economic policy or just politics?
Right. The blog also challenges Trump's claim that he doesn't think about the markets. It says, we should consider his actions in the context of his political strategy, his desire to project an image of strength and control.
Let's get specific about these concessions. The blog says many of the things Mexico and Canada agreed to were already in place under the Biden administration. It's like Trump's trying to take credit for things that already existed and spin it as a victory.
One example, the Canadian fentanyl czar, the blog explains, that the amount of fentanyl crossing the U.S.-Canada border is actually very small. This position is symbolic. That makes you wonder about the motivations behind this agreement. Does it really address the problem?
It seems to be a pattern. With Trump, the blog argues that many of his wins are empty. They rely on misleading narratives. It works with his base. But it's worrying, this erosion of truth and accountability in politics.
The blog emphasizes that these actions have consequences, negative consequences, even without real gains, continued market uncertainty, damage to U.S. credibility, strained relationships with allies, just some of the downsides.
They share an anecdote from a Canadian reader showing the human impact of Trump's actions. This reader talks about how the trade wars have fueled anti-American sentiment, strained relationships, the unintended consequences.
This story shows us that these decisions have ripple effects.
Beyond economics and politics, they affect people's lives, relationships, perceptions.
Okay. Just a reminder, the trade war with China is still going on. No end in sight. Economic uncertainty impacting businesses and consumers globally. So much for winning.
It's complex. Potentially significant consequences in the long term, economically and diplomatically. The blog says we need to look beyond the short term. Consider the broader implications of these trade wars for global stability and cooperation. All right, let's move on. Another intriguing and perhaps unsettling topic, questionable appointments. In the second Trump administration, the blog suggests these appointments reflect a worrying trend beyond just political favors.
The blog sets a slightly ominous tone, arguing that these appointments show a deeper shift in values, priorities of those in power they point to, people with concerning backgrounds, extreme views, questionable qualifications in positions of authority.
And we're not talking about typical political cronies. The blog highlights people who it ties to white nationalist groups, accusations of abuse, open misogyny. It's shocking.
The blog mentions Tulsi Gabbard potentially being confirmed as director of national intelligence, even with concerns about her past. Senator Susan Collins's justification for supporting her.
The blog uses the word gobbledygook to describe Collins's reasoning. It's accurate. Like, she's trying to justify a decision she's not even comfortable with. It makes you wonder about the judgment of those confirming these appointments.
It does seem like they're prioritizing political convenience over qualifications, ethics. The blog argues that this trend of rewarding loyalty over competence is more and more common in the second Trump administration.
And we have examples. Darren Beatty, fired from the first Trump administration for ties to white nationalists. Now he's an undersecretary of state. Sean Parnell lost custody of his children due to abuse allegations. Now he's an assistant secretary of defense. And then Andrew Kloster openly describes himself as a raging misogynist, embraces conspiracy theories. Now he's Wright Mistos, the chief counsel for the Office of Personnel Management.
Yes.
Mind-boggling.
These appointments raise serious questions about how they're choosing people for these positions and the potential consequences of putting
people with such extreme views, questionable backgrounds, in positions of authority.
The blog sums it up with a Venn diagram showing the overlap between Trump allies, misogynists, and conspiracy theorists. It's a visual of the kind of people now shaping policy, influencing decisions in the government. It's provocative. Makes you think about the implications of these appointments for the government and the political landscape. What does it say about our democracy when people with these views and backgrounds are given such important roles?
That's a good question. And that's the end of part one of our deep dive into U.S. politics. We've covered Elon Musk's power grab, the trade war facade, and the trend of questionable appointments.
It's been a journey so far, hasn't it? And we've only just scratched the surface.
Stay tuned for part two. We'll keep exploring these topics and go deeper into the potential consequences of these trends.
It's a complicated picture, isn't it?
It is, but here's where I think it's really interesting. the blog. It doesn't just present the problems, it also highlights pushback, potential for change.
Right. The blog emphasizes it's not hopeless. There's resistance, efforts to hold those in power.
Example, they talk about employee unions challenging Musk in court.
Yeah.
Specifically, his access to those federal computer system, sensitive data, they're arguing it violates privacy, poses a risk.
To national security. Right. Legal challenges. They're one way to push back against overreach, maybe establish clearer boundaries between private influence and government.
And then there's the political side. The blog mentions Democratic politicians raising awareness about these trends, calling for investigations, demanding transparency, pushing for stricter oversight.
It'll be interesting to see how this plays out politically. Will they gain traction, make a real difference, or will it be dismissed as just partisan attacks?
It's a battle worth watching, for sure. The blog also suggests some more strategic, maybe even unconventional, tactics, slowing down the Senate, leveraging budget negotiations to pressure the administration to address these concerns.
Those are aggressive approaches. They show the urgency among those who are concerned about these trends. It'll be fascinating to watch how these strategies play out. Can they really challenge the power dynamics?
Let's go back to the trade wars for a minute. That Canadian fentanyl czar we talked about, the blog says, it's a prime example of Trump-style symbolic gestures over real policy action.
Yeah, they explain that. The amount of fentanyl crossing the border between the U.S. and Canada. It's tiny.
That's, I don't like that.
This position is more about symbolism than a solution to the opioid crisis.
It makes you think, was this just about a headline for Trump? Looking like a tough negotiator taking action, even if the reality is more complicated. It also raises the question about these symbolic gestures. In international relations, are they useful? Do they solve anything? Or do they just create a false sense of progress while hiding the real issues?
This brings us to a bigger point about the long-term effects. These trade wars, the blog says, these actions, even if they seem like wins in the short term, can damage relationships, erode trust.
They talk about the U.S. and Canada, the relationship, how these trade disputes have increased anti-American feelings, created uncertainty. That could last a long time.
They even say it could affect the upcoming Canadian elections, maybe lead to a government that's less friendly to the U.S. It's a reminder that these actions have consequences beyond just the economy. And it's not just Canada, the blog says. These trade wars are hurting America's reputation globally, making it harder to work with other countries on issues that need global cooperation.
It's like we're focused on winning now, even if it means sacrificing stability and partnerships in the long run. And don't forget, the trade war with China still going strong, no resolution, a lot of uncertainty for the global economy, geopolitics, so much for easy wins.
It's a mess, potentially. Huge consequences down the line for the economy and diplomacy. The blog says we need to think long term. Think about the effects of these trade wars on stability, cooperation around the world.
Okay, let's go back to Trump's appointments. Remember that Venn diagram, Trump allies, Secaucus, conspiracy theorists. Let's look at some specific examples.
The blog goes into detail about some of these appointees, their backgrounds, qualifications. It makes you wonder how they choose people for these jobs.
Like Darren Beatty, Undersecretary of State. That's the same guy who got fired from the first Trump administration for speaking at a white nationalist event.
That's troubling. It makes you question how serious the administration is about
dealing with
extremism in the government.
And there's Sean Parnell, Assistant Secretary of Defense.
Yeah.
This is the same Sean Parnell who lost custody of his kids because of
abuse allegations from his ex-wife.
A serious concern about how they vet people for these jobs, the ethics. It shows how much they value loyalty over experience and being qualified.
What about Andrew Kloster, chief counsel for the Office of Personnel Management? This is the guy who says he's a raging misogynist and promotes conspiracy theories.
Hard to understand. An appointment like that seems to normalize extreme views, undermine the government's professionalism, credibility.
These appointments are meant to provoke, push the limits of what's acceptable in public service.
The blog suggests it's part of a strategy to consolidate power, remake the government based on a specific ideology.
It makes you think about our democracy. What direction are we headed? What's the role of government representing the people, serving the people? It's worth thinking about. These appointments are not just isolated incidents. They're part of a pattern that could change the political landscape for years to come.
This brings us to a big question. What can we do as individuals in the face of all of this, these complex, unsettling developments? It's easy to feel overwhelmed, powerless when you look at
systemic issues.
The blog says it's important to be informed citizens, think critically, engage in the political process. It might sound cliche, but knowledge is power. The more we understand, the better equipped we are to deal with it.
So where do we begin? How do we become more informed, engage, without getting lost in the information overload?
The blog says, find reliable sources, engage in thoughtful discussions, challenge our own assumptions, biases. It's a process of learning, thinking critically. It takes effort, but it gives us power to make choices, participate, shape our world.
It's about becoming our own fact checkers, right? We can't just accept information passively, especially with social media, partisan news. We need to learn how to evaluate sources, spot biases, form our own informed opinions.
Exactly. The blog says be skeptical of those headlines. Look deeper. Consider the motivations, the credibility of those presenting the information. Be discerning. Think critically.
And that ties into engaging with our elected officials. We can't just complain online. We need to hold them accountable, contact them, express our concerns, demand action.
Make our voices heard individually, collectively. And remember, even small actions, a letter, attending a town hall, they contribute to a larger movement for change.
Okay, I'm going to go back to something you said about the long-term consequences of these trends, the blog. It's pretty sobering. You suggest we might be seeing a shift towards a more authoritarian style
of government.
Right, they're concerned about democratic norms eroding, power becoming concentrated in the hands of a few, the normalization of extreme views. Historically, these are signs. Authoritarianism.
It sounds alarming. But
is it really that serious? I mean, we're still a democracy.
Right.
We have checks and balances, free press, the right to vote.
Those are all essential to a functioning democracy, and we need to defend them. But the blog argues these institutions, safeguards, they're not invincible. They can be weakened, even dismantled, if we don't protect them.
It feels like we're at a crossroads. The choices we make today will have a lasting impact on the future of our country.
Democracy. It's not a spectator sport. It requires active participation, informed engagement, a willingness to defend our values, our institutions.
So what now? What can we do to address these concerns, safeguard our democracy?
The blog has some suggestions. First, stay informed, engaged in the political process. Learn about the issues. Follow current events. Participate in thoughtful discussions.
Be aware of what's going on, not just in Washington, but locally. Pay attention to local elections, school board meetings, community initiatives.
That's right. Democracy, it starts at the local level. The more we participate in our communities, the more influence we have on decisions that affect us directly.
The blog also says, connect with organizations that are fighting for these issues. There are so many groups working on social justice, the environment, human rights, democratic reforms.
Find something that you care about. And find a way to contribute. Your time, your skills, your resources, even small contributions can make a difference.
And lastly, the blog says, it's okay to feel overwhelmed, uncertain. These are big issues. No easy answers. Don't give up hope.
Remember, you're not alone. Millions of people share these values, working to create a better world, more just.
Equitable. It's about finding strength in numbers, connecting with others who share our vision. Working together to build a future where democracy thrives.
Yeah.
It's good to remember that. People are out there making a difference. Even when things seem daunting, it shows us we have power. Our actions matter.
The blog's point is we can't just wait for someone else to fix things. We have to be citizens, be part of the solution.
I like that. Taking charge. It's our responsibility to shape our society.
And it doesn't have to be big things, grand gestures. It's the everyday stuff, the conversations, how we act in our communities.
It's about thinking about the information we see, what we buy, how we treat each other. Our actions have an impact. We can choose to act according to our values.
The blog makes a good point. It's a process, this. Building a better society, more just, more fair. It never ends. We have to stay aware, think critically, challenge the way things are.
It's about being open to learning, growing, changing as things change around us in politics and society.
We have to remember there will be setbacks, challenges, but we can't give up. There's hope. People are resilient. Collective action is powerful.
So what have we learned from this deep dive? What's the main takeaway?
The main message, we're not helpless. We can shape our future ourselves together, stay informed, stay engaged, stay hopeful, even when things are uncertain, complicated.
I like that. We can make a difference in the world. We want to see we all have a part to play. A more just, equitable, democratic society.
This deep dive, it's been interesting, hasn't it?
Yeah.
We've looked at Elon Musk, his influence, trade wars, those appointments, a lot of challenging stuff.
Definitely eye-opening. We've learned a lot.
Yeah.
About what's going on, the potential consequences.
I hope you also feel empowered. We're not just watching this happen. We can influence things, create a better future.
Thank you so much for guiding us through this deep dive. Your insights, your analysis have been amazing.
You're welcome. And remember, this is just the beginning. Keep learning. Keep thinking.
If you want more information, analysis on these topics, check out electoral-vote.com. Keep those minds working. And remember, stay curious, stay informed, stay engaged.